Welcome to The Point on WCAI. I'm Steve Junker, speaking to you from my home office in Woods Hole. It's Friday, March 27th, and this is our weekly news roundup. I'll be discussing the local coronavirus story with colleagues in the print and digital media. Today on the program, we'll be hearing from WCAI's Sam Houghton and from Eve Zuckoff. We'll speak with Noah Asimow at the Vineyard Gazette, Tim Wood at the Cape Cod Chronicle, Marianne Bragg at the Provincetown Banner. We'll check in with Jack Spillane at the Standard Times of New Bedford, Josh Balling at the Nantucket Inquirer and Mirror. We'll hear from George Brennan at the Martha's Vineyard Times and Mike Dean up at the State House. And we'll finish off by checking in with WCAI's Jeanette Barnes, who is right now on a press call with Barnstable County officials. We saw a sharp increase in coronavirus cases in our area this week, including the first with us right now with the latest numbers and information as of this Friday morning is WCAI's Sam Houghton. Good morning, Sam.
Hey, Steve. How's it going?
Good, Sam. Last week at this time, we were just seeing some of the first cases appearing in our region. Bring us up to speed. Where are we now?
Yeah, just looking at the state numbers, we had about 600 confirmed cases on Monday. Now that's almost quadrupled. We're at 2,500. Reports of hospitalizations are now up to 200. And the unfortunate news, 25 people have died, including our first here on the Cape, a Brewster man in his 80s. I think you'll hear more about that coming up. Locally, though, Barnstable County state officials say there's 70 or 67 cases now. Just in perspective, we had 5 confirmed during the roundup last week. There's now 90 in Bristol County. That went up a lot this week. And South Coast Health, they opened a new testing site in Dartmouth, actually at an undisclosed location, kind of interesting. So that could be one reason for the surge in numbers. And then on the islands, we've confirmed so far 3 on Nantucket and then 2 on Martha's Vineyard. But they're expecting a lot of tests to come back soon. So I'm expecting that that's going to be going up in the coming days.
So those numbers increasing as most people expected they would be at this moment. Give us a broader sense now of the response to all of this.
Yeah, a big story we've been following, which you'll probably hear more about on the show, is an emergency order on the islands. Selectmen from all 6 towns on the Vineyard and selectmen on the Nantucket as well. They put a temporary ban in place on landscaping and construction, really a stay-at-home order like the governor's, but more extensive. They're saying construction, landscaping, that's not essential, but the governor, he's saying that it is, and he's pushed back on the island's order. They say they want kind of a unified order across the state. But then actually you have builders and kind of a building associations on the island standing up for their own town's order saying, you know, to workers, don't go to work. And, you know, I think it's really important to note, you know, the islands have limited hospital resources and they're isolated. And to, you know, share resources or get a patient to another hospital, you know, it requires some travel time. Mm.
Sam, we heard some troubling news this morning out of Boston.
Yeah, you know, we don't have a whole lot of information on it right now, but something like 100 medical staff in Greater Boston tested positive. That was just a handful last week, so that's troubling news. But I think, you know, on the upswing here, you know, some good news. A lot of groups and individuals, they're stepping up to bring equipment to hospitals. You know, hospitals are slowly losing equipment. There is a fish packaging business in New Bedford. They donated something like 40,000 PPEs, personal protective equipment. Now Skip's Marine, kind of cool. Also, people around the community are, you know, putting together their own masks for hospitals to use, which is a nice story to hear this day and age.
WCAI's Sam Houghton bringing us up to date with the numbers here on Friday morning. Thanks, Sam.
Thank you, Steve.
Many of us have been staying very close to home in answer to the coronavirus situation. WCAI's Eve Zuckoff, however, has been out and about almost every day this week, driving across the Cape as she reports on community impacts. She joins us now. Good morning, Eve.
Good morning, Steve.
Eve, Governor Baker's stay-at-home advisory came down on Tuesday. It called for the closing of non-essential businesses. As I say, you've been our ears and our eyes around the Cape this week. How have things changed from your view?
Yeah, so by Monday, a lot of businesses were already closed. But, you know, I could go into a candy shop, talk to a candy shop owner. I could talk to a clerk at a kitchen supply store. I'd say by Wednesday, after the Tuesday noon closure of all brick-and-mortar businesses were closed, every seventh car I saw was a truck from a landscaping or construction business. Those are really the people out on the roads. Those are really the people who are working. And of course, there are exceptions. There's also lots of cars at pharmacies, at grocery stores. But for the most part, things have thinned out. But it's been dominated by plumbing trucks and landscaping trucks more than anything else.
So you saw a lot of contractors out, a lot of construction trucks. You spoke with some workers in the industry this week about their status as essential workers. What did they tell you about what it means to still be working while so many people aren't?
Yeah, so I talked to some landscaping and roofing workers. They were really happy to be working. They felt like, you know, we are still providing for our kids. We're lucky to be getting a paycheck. One said he was doing that on a voluntary basis at his company. Every single guy out there that I saw for this landscaping company drove his own truck to work that day. So they've made changes. Another person I talked to said, no, we're still two-door truck. We're not doing anything differently. We're working side by side. But then because of that, because there's not much of a great standard, another person I talked to who works for a construction company said he was really frustrated to be working. His company does stuff like sewage repair and road repair. Those are obviously really necessary services. But he and his partner did curbs and sidewalks. So his attitude was, why are we working? We have sick family members at home who have asthma, who are cancer survivors. Our particular jobs don't feel essential, yet we're here and we face retribution if we speak out and tell our boss this doesn't feel appropriate. So it was a massive range of emotions.
Mm. You also spoke with the owner of another essential business that not everyone might agree with. What's the perspective from a business owner there?
Yeah, so while workers are saying, some essential workers are saying we want to be here, others aren't, you have to consider that small business owners are making really hard decisions right now. So I spoke to the owner of a laundry service. He said this was incredibly hard. He saw a 40 to 50% drop in business over the course of a single weekend. And a lot of business owners are facing really brutal cuts. He had to make a decision. He's 30 people on staff. Was he going to cut everyone's hours or just lay 10 people off so they could collect unemployment? And that's what he did. And that was a hard choice as well. And, you know, this is especially hard for Cape businesses because they're just getting into their busy season because of, you know, the seasonal nature of our region. So it's stoking a lot of fear for business owners.
Stoking a lot of fear, there have also been some positive stories this week. I want to ask you about one you worked on. You went out to look at and speak with people who are donating face masks to healthcare workers. Tell us about this.
Yeah, so I first spoke with a number of the science institutions down in Woods Hole. Just this week, we got the numbers. The Marine Biological Laboratory donated 20,000 pairs of latex gloves. An even bigger institution, HUI, Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution, donated even more. I mean, those are really massive efforts from the science community. And then at a much smaller scale, I went to Joanne Fabric and Craft Store in Hyannis on Tuesday at around 11, you know, an hour before the closure of that and so many other stores. And there was a line, 10 women, it happened to be 10 women deep, who were there to pick up kits to home make masks with, you know, squares of fabric and elastic and instructions. One woman I spoke to there was planning on making 50 masks. She had already made 30 and donated them. Another woman was bringing them back to a club of 10 other women that were going to donate the masks to Nantucket. I mean, those efforts have been really incredible, and people are still posting online a lot saying, does anyone have elastic? We're in need of elastic. We have enough squares. So people are looking for ways to get involved, and they were doing it up until the very last minute.
It's WCAI's Eve Zuckoff. Eve, thanks for that.
Thank you, Steve.
It's been a whirlwind week for Martha's Vineyard, and as the six towns came together on a piece of public health policy, Governor Baker pushed right back on it. Noah Asmo of the Vineyard Gazette joins us now with the story. Good morning, Noah.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing well. Noah, walk us through the action here. What happened between the towns and the governor, and what do they feel is at stake here?
Okay, so this is kind of complicated, so I'm just going to give a little bit of background. The whole notion of a construction ban started over a week ago in Nantucket, last Saturday, after pretty much what was like a total marathon of teleconference video meetings, two towns on the island, which were West Hisbury and Chilmark, decided to institute construction moratoriums of their own. The moratoriums were pretty much modeled exactly after the Nantucket bans, and, you know, they stopped construction for 2 weeks on everything except emergency building. They would give builders a small amount of time to secure their sites, and then Edgartown and Tisbury followed along. But then on Monday, Baker instituted what was, you know, his own stay-at-home order, which actually, while it shuttered a variety of non-essential businesses, it did not ban construction. In fact, it called construction and landscape work an essential service. So Nantucket and all the island towns, they decided to institute a stricter version of the stay-at-home order, basically their own version of it. And that version would ban construction. It would limit gatherings to 5 instead of 10 people. And the islands, in this sort of rare show of unanimity, pretty much all approved it either Monday or Tuesday. But then they got a surprise from Governor Baker's office saying that the order basically had to be withdrawn because his more lenient order, in the words of his chief legal counsel, should supersede that order or take precedence over it. And then the islands have, again, very rapidly responded and said, hey, no, we're kind of dealing with what could become a life or death situation here because our hospitals are limited. We have rural communities with very, you know, sort of, you know, resources that are going to be stretched were there to be an outbreak here. And that we kind of need an exemption. So I think the islands, you know, Martha's Vineyard and Nantucket, who are kind of coming together on this, they see it as a pretty much life or death situation. And they are asking Baker for an exemption and saying to him in so many words, we kind of, you know, were there to be an outbreak here and were the issue to get really bad at the hospitals, this is something that would be on your hands too, because your legal counsel has said that the local orders would not apply. So that's kind of a rundown, but it is complicated.
It is complicated. And real briefly here, where we stand now is that there's essentially a voluntary construction ban that they're talking about, right?
Yes. Where it is right now is basically that the towns haven't heard back from Baker's office, but they're all telling their builders, their citizens, their residents that until they do hear back, we urge you to voluntarily abide by the strict stay-at-home orders that we have instituted as local municipalities. And I think part of that is them saying, you know, the whole idea behind everything that was instituted over the past week was to sort of, you know, it was a message. It was a message to tell people, hey, this is going to, if there were to be an outbreak, it would be a huge issue here. We need to be careful. We need to stay at home and we need to practice social distancing. And I think that was sort of the political message that was being sent by what were intended to be, you know, a legal order and rule. Yeah. And you know, I was just going to add, while it seems like the town leaders are showing what is, in my experience, a totally unprecedented amount of unanimity on this, it's not necessarily true among members of the community. The Martha's Vineyard Builders Association did vote to support the local orders, but that was the board of the Martha's Vineyard Building Association. It wasn't the membership at large. And speaking to one of the board members yesterday, he said that there were actually a very large variety of opinions on the construction bans on the island. And it's an issue that, you know, on the one hand, the leaders are seeing as sort of a life or death concern, but a lot of the workers and builders, which is a huge part of the economy here, you know, this is their livelihood. And particularly this time of year, this is when most of the building on the island happens. So it really is a blow. Yeah. An economic blow, definitely.
Yeah. Noah Asmo at the Vineyard Gazette. Noah, thanks for joining us and running that down for us.
No problem. Thank you for having me, Steve.
This is the news roundup on The Point. We're going around the region today talking about the local impacts of the coronavirus and how communities are meeting the challenge. I'm Steve Junker. When facing adversity like this, there are always those who step forward to try to make things better, to help. Tim Wood from the Cape Cod Chronicle joins us now to talk about some of those efforts. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning, Steve.
Tim, you've profiled some of these efforts, both individual people and groups really pitching in. Tell us about these.
Sure. You know, we ran across a number of instances amidst all the mostly bad news that we've come across on this issue of people reaching out and helping their neighbors, going above and beyond. And this week we highlight some of those stories. And they include a half dozen kids in East Harwich were using their time out of school and their bikes to do errands for neighbors. We found an East Harwich woman named Jane Bissett, who is a sewing teacher and runs a sewing company. And she put out a video teaching people how to sew masks for healthcare workers. And people from all over the country were pitching in to follow her easy directions. And that's on her Facebook page. Her company is called Stitchology. And there's quite a few local businesses who've pitched in to lend a hand in Chatham. The social services organization, Monomoy Community Services, had to cancel one of its major fundraisers, which was slated for this weekend, I believe. And to help make up for the revenue loss from that, the Wayside Inn here in town donated $10,000 to Monomoy Community Service. And Wayside Inn owners David and Gail Oppenheim and partner Shane Coughlin also donated $5,000 worth of food to a small community food pantry at the Chatham Elementary School. That pantry, usually during regular times, serves about 220 people each month, according to Principal Robin Millen. But she said those numbers are going up, and they're working with a couple of volunteers to make sure family members of students who work in the service industry and have lost their jobs are able to put food on the table. A couple of other businesses are also working through Monomoy Community Services to help local families. Mahi Gold, which is a local clothing store, set up a website to allow customers to donate diapers and other necessities for local families in need that will go directly to the clients of Monomoy Community Services. And Hangar B, which is a restaurant at Chatham Airport, is providing free meals to Monomoy Community Services clients. And, you know, there's a lot more stories like this out there. You know, we're getting more of them every day, and, you know, we'll try to continue to highlight those in the paper in the coming weeks.
You mentioned food pantries there briefly. Food demand is on the rise at food pantries. We don't have a lot of time here, but just tell us specifically, you have some suggestions for how people can help food pantries right now.
Sure. The food pantries, specifically the family pantry in Harwich, and we also talk with Lower Cape Outreach, which runs 10 pantries in the Lower Cape. They're looking mostly for financial donations at this time. They're able to get the food they need mostly through the Boston Food Bank, but they don't need other donations right now. For instance, the family pantry has closed its thrift shop because they need those volunteers to help out to meet the increased demand at the pantry. So they're basically looking for financial donations. Also, they can always use volunteers. So folks can look them up on the internet and either volunteer or make financial donations.
That's Tim Wood at the Cape Cod Chronicle. Tim, thanks for finding us some upbeat stories to talk about today as well.
Great. Thanks, Steve. Take care.
Provincetown, like most towns across the region, has seen the number of coronavirus cases climb this week. From the Provincetown Banner, we're joined now by Marianne Bragg, Hi, Marianne.
Hey, Steve. How are you?
I'm well, Marianne. Thanks for joining us. Provincetown had a stay-at-home order in place, but as it was on the islands, this has been dislodged somewhat by the governor. Explain what's happened there for us.
Well, let's see. So yesterday, the town officials did lift Provincetown's own kind of order to stay inside and essential services only. I think mainly because they wanted to be in line with the governor's order and to reduce the complexity. So that's kind of it. I don't know if there's any great changes. One difference was that our in Provincetown, our order went through the end of April versus the governor's, which I think goes through April 7th. So.
And what are you seeing now for coronavirus cases in Provincetown area?
Well, let's see. So we had two. That was the first report. I think it was on Sunday. Now we're up to seven. And our reporter, Alex Spira, specifically on the Barnstable County line phone call. So the number seven hasn't moved any higher for Provincetown. We also have one for Truro, three for Eastham. These are confirmed cases. And then I think Wellfleet now is the only town in Barnstable County that does not have a confirmed case so far.
Provincetown, it likes to celebrate its events and holidays. What is the word on events that may happen or definitely won't?
Well, it's a mixed bag. Already kind of the two key events that happen in June, one is the Portuguese Festival, and the other one is the International Film Festival. Both of those have been altered. So the Portuguese Festival is going to be scaled down dramatically. It's usually a big, you know, festivity right in the center of town with food booths and dancing and all kinds of processions and stuff. So all of that, I think, is going to be gone. They're going to be hanging banners, you know, on the street still. And they hope to have the blessing of the fleet, which is where the fishing boats go by and they holy water is dropped on each boat. So that's kind of where that is. The International Film Festival has just been canceled completely for its in-town location. And they're hoping to do some programming, I think, later on. And then at the same time, though, there's another big event, Provincetown Gay Pride, which is, the first weekend in June. And that's still standing for the moment. Also, just looking out a little farther into August is probably the biggest thing that happens. It's Carnival, and that's also still scheduled. So the Business Guild, they're sponsoring both of those events, and they say they're looking out like a 30 to 45 day future in terms of decision making on what to cancel or what to change.
And is that similar to Memorial Day weekend?
Well, that's kind of a big question. You know, Memorial Day is a big weekend for young gay women to come to town, but it's not like it's a big sponsored event where someone can send out a message to a certain group. But the Business Guild, because it does market to LGBTQ tourists, they're trying to send out messages right now that it's basically positive messaging, I guess, where, you know, this might be a difficult time, but Provincetown is still a place that you love and it will be here, you know, whenever you're able to come. So that's kind of their message for the moment.
That is Marianne Bragg at the Provincetown Banner. Marianne, thank you.
Thank you.
Special education students face particular challenges when it comes to shifting their schooling from a physical classroom to a virtual learning model. Jack Spillane joins us from the Standard Times with the story. Hi, Jack.
Hi, Steve. How are you today?
I am well. Jack, Your reporter talked to a number of parents for this story. It's such a good story. Tell us what kinds of things she heard from parents.
Well, it was very moving. One of the most moving stories was from Kathleen Amaral. She shared that she has three kids at home and she's working. Her two traditional schooling students are able to take care of themselves very well, but the special education child has a lot of one-on-one tasks that he needs. And her fear is that he will regress because the virtual learning is not accommodated to him as easy as some of her other kids. And there's a lot of social networking among the parents going on to try to address these issues, but it really hasn't been solved yet.
You can understand how, for some of these kids, structure must be so much a part of how they learn and what they're used to, and have that structure taken away, particularly for these kids, presents such a challenge.
Yes, structure and routine are two things that are very important, particularly with autistic kids. So the parents are brainstorming as to ways they can do things. Some of the teachers have gotten involved with communicating directly online to the children. One of the challenges is that the state does not require you to provide everything in a virtual learning atmosphere that would be provided in the classrooms. So the special ed parents are wondering, yes, the teachers are doing what they can, but what can we mandate that they give us? And the answer seems to be, you know, not that much, what they can do.
When I think about the services these children have probably been receiving in the schools, through the schools, things, services and therapies that just can't be provided virtually, like you say, I guess a big concern here is that whatever progress they're making, you know, has to be continually fed. And if it's not being fed through those services or therapies, then they start to move backwards.
Yes, they do regress. One of the things is that the parents themselves have sort of taken the bull by the horns. Ebony McGlynn, who leads the Acushnet Fairhaven Special Education Parent Advisory Council, said that she's been communicating with other parents and with tips for structure and tips for support for academics. But it's really, much of it is really being done on their own.
Is there a sense of encouragement here for them as they're trying to put this together? Is it support from other parents? Where are they looking for to look for that next thing that's going to help them?
Yeah, I think these group support boards are one of the ways that it's encouraging. I think there was some initial discouragement. I think the schools, as the school closure has extended, are mobilizing for what they can do. But there is no doubt that special education students, because so much of it is done on a one-on-one basis, are really probably more in danger of regressing even than the average students.
Jack Spillane from the Standard Times of New Bedford. Jack, thanks for joining us.
Very good.
Ferry service to Nantucket has been cut back, and that is just one of the impacts of coronavirus for the island. Josh Balling is with us now from the Nantucket Inquirer and Mirror. Hiya, Josh.
Good morning.
Josh, when we talked last week, you had not yet had a confirmed case on the island. I think Nantucket was the very last county in the state with a confirmed case of coronavirus. Now everything seems to be moving very quickly. Bring us up to speed on what's been happening.
Things are moving quickly, but actually in the last couple of days, I won't say they've slowed at all, but there's a little bit of pace has been added back into life, I think. Nantucketers, like you mentioned, have some other realities to adjust to that not everyone in the rest of the state do, like ferry service interruptions and cancellations. But right now, they're continuing to adjust to realities of coronavirus as best they can. There are now 3 confirmed cases on the island. 9 more patients were tested yesterday. But the more important number probably is that 36 tests are still pending. Since testing began, 71 people on the island at the hospital have qualified for the tests, and their swabs sent up to state labs. 32 negative results have come back. The 3 positives have come back, and those 36 are still out there. Of those 3 people on Nantucket who have tested positive, all 3 are being monitored in their homes by healthcare clinicians. They have not been brought to the hospital. They are being monitored at home. We have information, a little bit of information on two of them. One of them is a woman in her 20s. Another is a man in his 50s, and we don't have any information yet on the third patient. Both patients we have information on, hospital officials and actually the town's health director said that they both had contact and or had both been to areas where there had been an outbreak over the past week. So that's the situation as far as the positive tests go. Hospital and public health officials obviously have been preparing and are continuing to prepare for additional cases. They're still urging that not only do residents abide by the town's stay-at-home order, which was put into place before the states and is actually stricter than the states. It includes a moratorium on construction. It mentions some travel restrictions as well, some of which are not enforceable at the local level, but are very strong encouragements. And they're still encouraging visitors not to travel to Nantucket to avoid overburdening the hospital, which, while it's almost brand new, was built to handle the day-to-day needs of a relatively small community that gets mm-hmm. bigger in the summer, but certainly not to handle a global viral pandemic. There are no intensive care unit. There are only 3 respirators and only 14 patient beds here. So the National Guard has been asked to mobilize on the island. Our state representatives and state senator have been working on that at the request of the hospital and some town officials to assist the hospital in particular with logistics and security should there be an outbreak. It's not known exactly when they're going to arrive, but it could be as early as next week, the police chief has said. And like you mentioned before, ridership on the Steamship Authority and Highline Cruises has really plummeted over the past week. Both have cut back service. The Highline is down to 3 round trips a day on its fast ferries, and that happened on Wednesday. On Tuesday and on Wednesday, all the Highline boats combined carry just 100 passengers. That's about half of what any single boat usually carries in a day. And the Steamship Authority has cut back its freight boat service. There's more than enough room on its regular car ferries to accommodate those trucks that are bringing over the food, fuel, and other supplies that the islands need. Schools are still closed. The governor's closed them through May 4th, and Nantucket school officials are really working hard now to come up with plans for remote learning. Until the May 4th closure was announced, they were really considering the closure that was supposed to be over on April 6th sort of as an extended break, and they had handed out some optional and supplemental work, but now they're really getting down to the nitty-gritty, and we'll have some plans announced soon about getting teachers and students reconnected to continue their work through the end of the school year, either remotely or in class, whatever that may be.
This is Josh Balling from the Nantucket Inquirer and Mirror with the update from Nantucket. Thank you, Josh.
Thank you.
This is the news roundup on The Point. We're going around the region today talking about the local impact of the coronavirus and how communities are meeting the challenge. I'm Steve Junker. What's an islander to do? That's the question in a headline in the Martha's Vineyard Times this week. George Brennan joins us now from the Times. Hiya, George.
Good morning, Steve.
George, the article here speaks to the confusion that seemed to reign this week as island authorities attempted to put some health policies in place and kind of had to backtrack quickly on some of this or seemed to be forced into a different position.
Yeah, you know, Steve, I'm trying to figure out what day it is. It's Friday, right? this has been so fast moving. On Tuesday, at one point, five out of the 6 towns were meeting about this, and at the night before, Edgartown met about it, and what they did was they approved an emergency stay-at-home order, and also many of the towns had construction bans in place, and those were included in this as well, and the idea was to stop people from moving around. As you might imagine, this time of year, typically, there's a lot of construction going on all across the island, people getting their seasonal homes ready. It's really the ideal time for them to be working. Mm-hmm. However, public officials were concerned. You know, some of those contractors are coming across on the ferry and going back every day. Not ideal in this situation. And so they wanted to shut that down, really, is what they wanted to do. And so they met, they put through these emergency orders, and the very next day, the governor's office said, well, we already have an advisory in place that supersedes what you've put in place, and we want construction to continue across the Commonwealth. So, you know, that begged the question on Thursday, what were people to do? These stay-at-home orders were supposed to be going into effect. The construction orders were supposed to be going into effect. You know, what if I'm on the island, what am I supposed to be doing here? And so we called around, and the officials on the island said, we're asking people to voluntarily follow the orders of the island. And until this is all squared away, letters are going back and forth between the administration and island leaders. It's still a stalemate, as far as we can tell. So islanders are being asked to, and the construction workers are being asked. There's a Martha's Vineyard Builders Association. They've asked their membership to adhere to the construction moratorium. And we're waiting to see how this all gets sorted out between the governor's office and the island.
George, in the middle of all this very news-intensive week, you have a good news story in the paper, although I have to say it made my heart thump just to read it a bit.
Yeah, you know, this is the news we needed, you know, is to hear about heroic actions. This is two Edgartown police officers, Will O'Terry and Jeff Trudell, got called to a scene they never want to get called to, and that's 2:30 a.m. There's a child, a baby, not breathing, and so they rushed upstairs, and their training went into full motion, and they were able to save this baby, and it is the good news story that we needed, and I couldn't wait to get this online and out to our readers because. You know, everybody's on edge, and the comments on this story, you know, just, you know, people have been back and forth on, you know, whether we should have stay-at-home orders and all and construction moratoriums, and but I think it's universal on this. Congratulations to those officers on a job well done.
That is George Brennan at the Martha's Vineyard Times. George, thanks for being with us this morning.
Steve, stay well.
Beacon Hill lawmakers have been busy this week trying to pass legislation aimed at dealing with the coronavirus epidemic. Governor Baker has also been rolling out new orders as the epidemic progresses. WCAI's Catherine Iden talked with State House reporter Mike Dean, who's been keeping tabs on it all.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Catherine.
Let's first talk about the governor has been holding daily news conferences. There's been a lot of news coming out of those conferences. Let's start with what came out on Wednesday when he announced that schools would be closed until May.
Yeah, this was another big bit of news. Each one of these press conferences, it's not even just updates on the numbers, facts, and figures surrounding this virus outbreak, but it's a lot of big policy changes and orders that the governor has been issuing. Wednesday was a great example of that, where not only did he tell us that schools were going to be closed, pre-K through 12, through May 4th, but also a number of new policies in place for pharmacies and grocery stores, for construction sites, for plastic bags. It was chock-a-block full of different news items as this kind of evolves. But the schools really hit hard. I think a lot of people were expecting an extension of the telelearning system that, you know, a lot of people have adopted. But, you know, just to say that schools won't be reopened until at least May 4th, and that this telelearning experiment has to continue, and parents need to keep their kids home to do it, and that will continue for longer than expected. Is really going to hit hard, and it's a major part of the impact that this virus is having on our society.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the governor saying, you know, a reminder to kids, this is not an early summer break. And when I heard the announcement, I could just hear parents kind of across the state groaning. I'm sure they understand why we're doing it, but it is a burden right now, I am sure.
Absolutely. I think Commissioner Riley from the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education said that, you know, they are also looking at the MCAS graduation requirements, maybe relaxing some of that. So there's going to be a lot of changes over the next few weeks as to what school in Massachusetts looks like.
You also mentioned Charlie Baker made some announcements about construction, and this kind of followed an order that was issued earlier in the week closing all non-essential businesses. Construction is considered essential, but it's a little bit confusing, I would venture to say.
Yeah, so the governor yesterday added additional guidelines for the construction industry, insisting on, you know, workers having access to sinks, hot water, sanitizer, and that workers need to be, you know, socially distanced 6 feet apart. So even in smaller quarters, they still need to, you know, adhere to these new rules that we're all kind of going on. There's a lot of close quarters in the construction business. This has met with some amount of controversy because a number of towns around, you know, Boston, throughout the state, Cape and the islands, certainly the islands, have issued their own moratoriums on construction right now. Right after Baker made the new safety requirements public, the city of Boston, which has had a ban in place on construction, doubled down. Mayor Marty Walsh said that he's not going to go forward with construction. It's still stopped in Boston. I asked the governor about this at his press conference Wednesday, and he said that, you know, Boston's going to do what they need to do. So, you know, at least from what the governor told me, it's not 100% clear, but it seems like he's giving municipalities a lot of leeway to, you know, cancel construction here. Whether that results in lawsuits, I don't know. But just why Baker would consider construction essential is because the housing crisis that we have is not abating in the face of the corona crisis. So that is something that is still on Baker's mind, that these construction timelines need to be kept up. And he thinks there is a safe way to do it. That's why he put the new health and safety guidelines in place.
Mm. Well, and I think it really is interesting that he's letting Boston do its thing, when we heard this week that he sent a letter to all six Martha's Vineyard towns who have construction bans in place saying they can't do that because that supersedes his order. On a federal level, Mike, and I know we don't often talk about federal news because we are focused on the State House, but there's a nearly $2 trillion aid package with a lot of things inside it to help cities and towns and healthcare organizations around the country. How does the governor feel about what it might contain for Massachusetts? Is he happy with it?
He's happy that they got a deal in place. That was one thing when I asked him on, I believe, Tuesday it was, the days are blending together, what he wanted to see D.C. do. He just said, make a deal, make a deal. He was pleased with what the initial House negotiations were. He said he reached out to Chairman Richie Neal from Springfield, who's the one of the major leaders in Nancy Pelosi's team for the Democrats as far as negotiating with the White House on things like this. He was happy with that, and I asked him if he had reached out to Senators Markey and Warren. He said that his staff was in communication with their offices about this, you know, $2 trillion bill. And then there was some news reports that Warren herself was pretty crucial to the negotiations at the last minute. So it seems like Baker has had some influence on here. I imagine anything, any portion of that $2 trillion that come to Massachusetts to allow the state to operate. If you saw the initial unemployment applications, not just for the state, but for the country as a whole, have absolutely skyrocketed. And that's a big part of the immediate money the state is going to need to back up its unemployment insurance system that is extremely taxed right now.
Lawmakers, of course, have been busy as well. And one of the things they did was they eased some restrictions for towns so that they don't have to hold town meetings. Those would violate the order that we can't have big gatherings. And they've also moved the special election, which was set for next week.
Yeah, so the Senate themselves set election dates. And so this was, if you remember, there was some controversy over when to have the primary and when to schedule this election. Now, because of the crisis, they're pushing back the election day from the end of the month into April. It seems prudent. I don't think anybody really wants to be standing in line to go vote right now. One thing that is important for both that municipal town meeting order and the extension of the special elections, and I think there are a handful across the state that have been delayed, is that they want to get people to do voting by mail and absentee voting as much as possible. You can use absentee voting for a special election for health concerns. This is applicable. So they want to give town clerks, town halls, more time to reach out to people and to get people to come into the town hall, get their, you know, absentee voting or voting by mail in order so that they can participate in this race.
And that is WCAI Statehouse reporter Mike Dean talking to us from Boston. Mike, thank you for all your hard work. Take care of yourself.
Oh, thank you very much. You too.
And that is WCAI's Catherine Iden speaking with Mike there at the Statehouse. This is the News Roundup. I'm Steve Junker. Every day this week at 9 a.m., Barnstable County officials have been holding a phone call with members of the media to get out information about the coronavirus pandemic and how local governments are responding, as well as what people can do to improve the situation. WCAI's Jeanette Barnes covers the call for us, as well as a good many other stories each week. She joins us now. Hi, Jeanette.
Good morning, Steve.
Jeanette, bring us up to date on this morning's call. What did you hear?
Yes, so if people have not already heard, the latest case count on Cape Cod is 67 positive cases. Sean O'Brien, who's the health director for Barnstable County, said that all of the towns on the Cape are now reporting cases except Wellfleet, which means that he doesn't have data from Wellfleet. So I'm not really sure, you know, if they have cases or not, but they're not reporting any officially. Yesterday, the Regional Emergency Planning Committee had over 100 people on a conference call from around the Cape and Nantucket talking about their priorities for their coordination center. And the big thing right now is the PPEs, the personal protective equipment, trying to coordinate donations as they come in and try to help people out if they're looking for supplies.
The PPEs, this is the equipment that medical providers typically need as they're dealing with these patients so that they don't get infected. You've done a bunch of reporting around this and the shortages that are apparent in the system. You reported this week about a nurse who works at Cape Cod Hospital, and she was saying that they're being asked to reuse their masks at the hospital, and that this is kind of unprecedented.
Right. So they're being asked to reuse the N95 masks, which are those sort of higher level respirator type masks. And she says that she's never been asked to do that in her entire career. They are normally thrown out after each patient. The nurses understand, she said, why they need to do it. They understand the shortage, but it also makes them very uncomfortable. She said they do feel like they're being put at risk doing that.
One of the other things she told you was that these masks are under lock and key right now.
Right. Well, I guess naturally they're concerned about people taking too many of them if they're trying to conserve. She said they're supposed to use the masks until they are, quote unquote, soiled. The definition of that, I'm not really sure. But yes, that once they need a new mask, she says the masks are available, but you do have to have it kind of signed out and assigned to you.
We heard also from you were on a media call this week with Cape Cod Hospital, and they were talking about shortages they have in this kind of equipment. And tell us what you heard there.
Right. So on Wednesday, they said that within 8 days, it was possible that they would run out of one of the types of personal protective equipment. They didn't really want to specify which one it was, but they have put out a call to the community for donations of different types of protective equipment, it ranked in order of what they need the most. And the top item is isolation gowns, which are a pretty specific thing. They're not even the same as a typical surgical gown. So I don't know if anyone in the community has something like that to donate. But then followed by the next things on the list were face shields and surgical masks.
I want to turn to a positive note. You talked to a staff member at Provincetown School District this week about how they're working to keep students connected. And it sounds like they've really stepped up to provide some structure for their students. Yeah.
Story to hear. So they are using a video conferencing app and connecting every day or every weekday. They, you know, it's kind of a small school, so she did, the director of technology there, she did emphasize that they have that luxury because they only have 130 students in pre-K through 8. But every day at 9 a.m., they have a school-wide video conferencing check-in. So kids who, she said, you know, are like in third grade, they don't just get to see their third grade teacher, but they get to see their STEAM teacher and the technology director and, you know, other people within the building that they're used to seeing. And then after the half-hour check-in, they have video chats with their teachers and their classes. Mm. And there's online content being delivered every day until noontime. Sounds like it might be a heavy lift for some families, but she did want to emphasize, too, that you know, they understand that not everyone's going to do that.
That is WCAI's Jeanette Barnes. Jeanette, thanks for that.
Yep, thanks.
That is our show for today. I want to thank my guests. We heard from WCAI's Sam Houghton and Eve Zuckoff and Jeanette Barnes. We spoke with Noah Asimo at the Vineyard Gazette and Tim Wood at the Cape Cod Chronicle, Marianne Bragg at the Provincetown Banner. We heard from Jack Spillane at the Standard Times, Josh Balling at the Nantucket Inquirer and Mirror, spoke with George Brennan at the Martha's Vineyard Times, and we heard from Mike Dean up at the State House. And a big thanks to Dan Treidel back at the studio. And to my family for tiptoeing around in the background from my home here in Woods Hole, I'm Steve Junker. Thank you for listening.